Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Bucks, Bears. Yes, Tom Brady was playing for one team. Yes, Nick Foles was playing for the other team. No, that was in no way a Super Bowl rematch. Absolutely nothing about that game was Super Bowl worthy. The Bucks are the most undisciplined team in the NFL. Their alleged GOAT QB does not even know how to count. And he straight lies out his ass. Meantime, the Bears might be the single weirdest, if not one of the worst, 4-1 teams ever. The only thing super about last night's game was Khalil Mack. It felt like he spent the entire night right up in Brady's face. He had 3 tackles, he had a couple of sacks, and he had 1 absurd toss of Tristan Wirfs. On the play in question, Mack sacked Brady. The play was over, but Wirfs was still riding Mack, so Mack threw him to the ground with 1 arm. Now, for the record, this guy goes like Wirfs. He goes like anywhere between 320 and 340. And Mack just ragdolled his ass with 1 arm. The ultimate, get off me! And if you don't believe me, when asked why he did what he did, Mack said, quote, he was holding on to me and I had to get him off. Right. In other words, like, get off me! That is some freakish strength. And there is a lesson in that. Rook, do not hold Khalil Mack. It's not going to work. And he's going to embarrass you with 1 arm. The ultimate, Khalil Mack can beat your ass with 1 arm tied behind his back. Literally. Look, I get that Thursday nights generally are whack when it comes to football. And that's even without the pandemic. But that was a really weird game. Tampa Bay jumps on the Bears early on, 13-0. Generally, you give Tampa Bay. Tom Brady, I should say. Generally, you give TB. Even TB43. A 13-0 lead. Then you can go right ahead and cancel Christmas. And that's not a play on words either. That's a fact. Going into last night's game, he had won 42 straight games when he had a 13-point lead or more. In other words, you just don't come back on a Tom Brady team because Tom Brady teams do not blow leads. They don't beat themselves and they never lose their heads and they never, ever overlook or forget the smallest detail. Yeah, that or now Brady-led teams do all of those things because every last one of them was on display last night for all of his peers and the entire rest of the world to see. As badly as the Bucks were playing, Chicago was still doing their damnedest in the end to let them win that game. Take Nick Foles. He finds David Montgomery for 17 yards. That takes the ball down to the Bucks 25. About 90 seconds left in that game. At that point, the Bears were in field goal range, even with their history of extremely shaky kicking. They're still right there. Pretty basic stuff, right? Keep the ball on the ground, spin the clock, make the Bucks use up their timeouts, kick the go-ahead field goal, leave old man TB43 as little time as possible. Again, really basic stuff. So Chicago runs on first down. Tampa Bay calls their second timeout. Cool. Do that again. Make them use their final timeout. Spin the clock. Or you can do what the Bears actually did.
Second down and 9. Foles throws. Pass is broken up. Robinson had it for a moment. Davis knocked it away. And Davis may have injured himself on that play.
I'm just shocked they threw the ball. I thought they'd hand the ball off and force the Bucks to use their last timeout and then run the clock down to about 30 seconds or whatever it would be and kick the game-winning field goal.
But instead, with the incompletion, Tampa Bay gets to hang on to the timeout with a minute 22 left.
Right? How do you not just spin the clock? Like, had Brady not done what he was about to do, what Chicago did right there might have been the dumbest thing ever. The hell were they doing on that play? The hell were they doing throwing the ball right there? If you call a pass there, you better complete it, because if you don't, which is exactly what happened, you stop the clock for the Bucks. And then you put more time on the clock for Brady. and you keep Brady in the game. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Because after the Bears kicked that field goal to take that 2019 lead, Tom Brady gets the ball back with 1:13 left, needing only a field goal to win. Now, remember how I mentioned that Brady had won 42 straight games when he had a lead of 13 or more? Here's another stat for you. He'd led 59 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter and overtime going into that moment, the most by anybody since the NFL merger. And he goes right to work, right? 12-yard completion to Mike Evans. He gets out of bounds. He stops the clock. Incomplete pass to Mike Evans. A short completion. Another incompletion, setting up this play.
Bucs playing without Godwin, without Watson. Fourth down and 5. Brady, pass is broken up. Incomplete. And the Chicago Bears are going to take over.
So the old man misses on that throw. But not a thing, right? Get everybody up to the line. Quickly, make a play, keep moving, get in field goal range, kick it, get the hell out of here with a dub. Let's go! Let's go! Except one problem. No one is lining up for this guy. And homeboy is just out there. He's all out here dumbfounded, holding up four fingers like, fourth down, fourth down. Except it had already been fourth down, which leads to the question, did Tom Brady really not know what down it was? Did Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr., the alleged GOAT, really not know what down it was in the final minute of a one-score game? Answer, hell yes. He had no idea what down it was. And I'll get to his crappy explanation in a moment, but believe me, believe that. He didn't know what down it was. Why else would he be standing out there holding up four fingers? I mean, that is just absolutely inexcusable. Like borderline criminal.
Borderline erotic.
Borderline erotic. Except nobody was aroused. Except the people on the right side of the bet. You can't do that in a two-minute drill. Actually, you can't do that ever. Especially if you're that guy. Especially if you're Tom Brady. I mean, who the hell are you, Brian Hoyer? Except Hoyer would know what down it was. He wouldn't know how many timeouts there were, but he would know what down it was. I mean, was that a senior moment for the old man? He looked totally confused, completely lost, like a kid who couldn't find his parents at the mall. Tom Brady is supposed to be a detail guy. Remember over the summer when he went to his offensive coordinator's house when he shouldn't have been there? Remember when he was getting the guys together at the high school when he shouldn't have been there? Why? Because he's all about the deets. Maybe instead of having practices together, they should have just done basic numbers. You know, hey, Tom, here's the number one, followed by the number two, and then there's three, and then comes four. Because four is important in football, because there is no fifth down. And then after you learn to count to four, we can work on your ABCs, Tommy. And by the way, if you do somehow, some way forget, there's usually signs around the stadium to help you out. There's that one dude on the sideline with the number that he holds up. And there's some massive freaking scoreboard that will tell you also what down it is. And remember earlier in that game when he was F-bombing his offensive lineman up and down for screwing up. Remember that? Yeah, well, if you do that and you show your teammates up like that, you better be able to freaking count to four. You can't scream your lungs out at your teammates for a mistake and going brain dead and then melt down mentally and cost your team the game in the end yourself. Man, totally unacceptable. But if for some reason that does happen, you sure as hell better own it after the game. But then again, if we're looking for Tom Brady to own something, let's just keep right on moving because that's not his deal. That's not who he is, not in New England, not in Tampa, not anywhere.
Yeah, I knew we needed a chunk, and I was thinking about more yardage. And then, it was bad execution. And we had a great opportunity there, so just didn't execute when we needed to.
Was it clear for you guys whether it was third or fourth down on that last play?
Yeah, we just, you're up against the clock and you're up against the clock. I knew we had to gain a chunk, so I should have been thinking more first down instead of chunk on that down. So.
This dude, that answer about screwing up the downs is actually worse than screwing up the downs. Did you hear that garbage? Let me read you his answer really quickly. Quote, yeah, you're up against the clock And you're up against the, I knew we had to gain a chunk, so I should have been thinking more first down instead of chunk in that situation. I knew we needed a chunk, and I was thinking about more yardage. It was just bad execution. We had a great opportunity there, so just didn't execute when we needed to. Yeah, we're on in Cincinnati. So to a question of what happened on that final play, his answer was to puke out the word chunk three times in two sentences, and then to say it was just bad execution without once admitting or owning what the guy did. I mean, what an absolutely bullcrap response. Hey, listen, if you're a business owner, you do not need us to tell you that running a business is tough, more so now than ever before. But you might be making it tougher on yourself than you need to. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down anymore. It is time to upgrade. Time to upgrade to NetSuite. Listen, you need to stop paying for multiple systems that do not give you the information that you need when you need it. Ditch the spreadsheets and the old software that you've already outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. It is the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, and it's all in one place instantaneously. So whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and save money with NetSuite. Join the over 21,000 companies that are using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Rome. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Rome. Once again, that's netsuite.com/Rome. Jason Lockenfora. Jason, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think from now on, whenever referenced anything alluding to my work on the NFL Today from home, I think we need to say it's a million-dollar studio, because that's what JB dubbed it last week. And if JB says it, it's the gospel. Never mind, my house is worth less than $500,000, I think. But
my man,
yeah, my million-dollar studio next to the hot water heater. It's
course,
amazing down there in the basement.
You know what? You're right,
you.
Jason. I was going to tell you, number one, it looks amazing. That setup does look good, and he did dub it the million-dollar studio.
Yes.
Then again, he is the same person that says that I travel on Air Rome.
That's
also
true.
Not true.
That's true.
Also not true.
Well, you know what? I'm in good company then. And again, JB's the man, so Air Rome it is.
He is the best guy that there is. We know that. Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, JLC, what about the Pats and the Titans? They did not have any positive tests today, so what does that mean in terms of their scheduled games for Monday and Tuesday, respectively?
Well, I mean, I would just say that, you know, those are sort of projected schedules for now that will all obviously be dictated by the science and the data and the testing results. And the league has some protocols in place. And assuming we don't get any new tests between now and then, that's when they'll play these games. Obviously, with the Titans, that situation has been heightened. And we're going on almost 2 weeks now where they haven't been able to have, you know, two days of you know, negatives and then get in on the third day and have no issues. We'll see if that can take place. Ideally, Jim, the league has told you, if you ask, that for health and safety reasons, competitive balance reasons, we'd like to have these teams have at least 2 days of practice at their facility before they have to go out there and play it, you know, a regular season NFL game. So it's still feasible Monday and Tuesday, but I think the one thing we found in all of professional sports in the era of COVID is that everything is fungible, everything is malleable, and stay tuned.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. Fungible and malleable in the same sentence. Extremely well played, my friend.
Thank you.
Listen, there are reports, and if we're looking at this generally speaking, now you've got reports that the Jets had a positive test.
Yeah.
Everybody was sent home from their facility. Generally, overall, what is your sense as to where the league is right now in terms of being concerned about how teams are handling COVID protocols?
I mean, there are going to be people who test positive. That is statistically right, that there was no way around that. And it was nothing short of miraculous that we're entering play week three and, you know, A.J. Terrell's the only player on the COVID-restricted list. Like, that shattered anybody's reasonable expectations. It shattered what the science would tell you to expect or project based on what's happening in the larger strata of this country in regards to COVID-19. So I think the key is that when these incidents occur, do the protocols work? And more to the point, especially in the case of the Tennessee Titans, are they being applied thoroughly, entirely, ironclad? And if they're not, then things we've seen, the bottom can fall out pretty quickly. The Jets, I was just checking in with the league before you called. That is still a presumed positive result for a player right now. They're awaiting further testing. They should have more clarification on the exact status of that result in the next few hours. For now, no decisions have been made about not playing the game and anything like that. We'll have to see what specifically is this player definitely positive? And then if he is, what is tomorrow like for the Jets? What does tomorrow's testing bring? It's just the world we live in right now. Can they keep this afloat? We're going to see, Jim. We're going to see. I know that everyone is trying. The league has, it's using the F word now, forfeiture. Even that's on the table if there is a sense that teams are repeatedly not keeping their house in order.
We were talking to Jason Lockenfora. He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. And when he appears on the NFL on CBS, he does so from that million-dollar studio. Yeah, exactly. This is going to be really something. Really quickly, a couple of thoughts before you go. What was your reaction, Jason, to the announcement that the Redskins, checked out the Washington football team, was going to bench Dwayne Haskins?
It just doesn't add up, Jim. I wrote a column this week at CBSSports.com. If you want to see my full thoughts on it, probably about 2,000 words. Look, they looked at the standings, said, wait a minute, this division is, we're 3 weeks, 4 weeks in, and this division is complete dog crap. So let's try to win a football game. And if that, is the end of Dwayne Haskins, so be it, because no one in that building besides the owner really seemed to be invested in Dwayne Haskins or doing things that would help Dwayne Haskins. It was kind of like, here's our system. Pick it up in this virtual offseason or don't. First three games, yeah, it wasn't great. We're going to put you on notice. We got Kyle Allen in the back pocket there. He already knows the system. He's our system guy, which is always all the rage in the NFL. But they didn't bring Christian McCaffrey over, and they didn't bring Curtis Samuel over. They didn't bring DJ Moore over. They didn't bring Greg Olsen over. And even with those guys and this great West Coast system and Kyle Allen, the last 8 weeks of the season in Carolina last year, that was one of the worst offenses you'll ever see. It's certainly comparatively one of the worst in the league last year. So I think Haskins got a raw deal. And if I'm Dwayne Haskins, I'm saying get me out of here.
We're talking to Jason Lockenfora, GLC. If he got a raw deal, and in fact he may have, I agree with what you're saying, by the way. What about Tyrod Taylor? Now, this is kind of a guy who can't really catch a break as it stands. The Chargers announced that Justin Herbert's going to be the starter. Given how he was playing, that does make sense, granted. But how brutal is that for Taylor?
It's bad. I mean, it's terrible. It can be life-altering from a financial standpoint because you saw the market last year just fall apart for even really established quarterback. I mean, Cam Newton, $1 million, right? If you're perceived as a backup, there's no room at the end. There's no money for you. Dalton playing for peanuts. Tyrod had a chance to show with a decent cast around him, that, hey, he is a starting quarterback. And as a pending free agent, if he performs well, that's going to put him in position to make considerably more than a vet minimum contract, which is probably what he's looking at now if Herbert stays healthy and plays the rest of the way. So there is that NFLPA grievance that, the NFL is investigating this. They have a 60-day window with which to file a grievance. I would be absolutely positively stunned if they don't go ahead with that. And they will make the case that if they look at this as doctor negligence, medical malpractice, that the Chargers should have to compensate him for his status going from starter to backup based on where that needle was put.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. JLC, one last thing before you go. In terms of head coaches, I really want to get your thoughts on this. How impressed are you with Kevin Stefanski and how he's gone about creating an offensive identity in Cleveland, especially after a really rough week one?
Thoroughly. He's a smart guy. He's been around professional sports all his life. He understands locker rooms. He's been around great coaches. He checks a lot of boxes, and he, from a preparedness standpoint, from a, sorry, this is This is my million-dollar studio, Jim, in Baltimore. Yeah, there you
That'll
go.
That'll happen, huh?
Yeah, this is how we roll. Look, he has a level of sort of a cerebral approach that is very different than what Freddie Kitchens was projecting. So I thought he would get these guys to buy in, and each week he's made adjustments, and they're become a better run operation each week, fewer penalties, fewer of, you know, the Browns browning like they normally would. He's getting Odell involved in different ways, being creative about that, keeping him engaged. Baker, look at the box scores, even if you don't watch the games. They don't want him throwing more than 25 times. Just be a point guard. You don't need to be, you know, Steph Curry. We don't need seven-step drop bombs away. Nah, we're going to run it down people's throat. We're going to hit them on play action, and you manage the game. Defensively, there's some issues with linebacker in the back end, but Myles Garrett might mess around and win the defensive MVP. I think the Browns are going to be a tough out. I think with an expanded playoff strata that they're going to get in. Do I think they're ready to win a bunch of games in January? Not yet, but I think for the first time in a long time, they are definitely headed in the right direction. They're America's team for a reason, Jim. Let's keep it real.
Right? Mel Tucker is my guest. Mel, it's nice to have you back. Before we get into the season and the work you have in front of you, how are you doing and how is everybody around you at this time doing, Mel?
Yeah, good to be back on with you, Romy. No, I'm doing great, and we have no complaints. Everybody's healthy. The family's healthy. We got a great staff. Everyone's working together. You know, we're working with our players, you know, connecting with them. And, you know, our practices have been very productive. And so all's well here in East Lansing.
That's good to hear. Mel Tucker joining us. Hey, Mel, take me back, because when you were hired, you said at that time, and again, this is a really unusual time, but at the time that you were hired, you said, quote, "When I walked in, I felt something different. I felt something special. I felt there was an energy. There was a vibe," end quote. So how would you describe that energy and that vibe that you felt?
Well, yeah, this is where I started my career, Jim, and in 1997 and 98, I was here as a graduate assistant, and I always felt a family atmosphere here. Football is extremely important. The fans are incredible, and the community just really supports the program. And it was kind of like everyone's rowing in the same direction and with common goals. And when I got here, all those feelings came back, and it's the same way. And I think that's really special to be able to come into a situation where you know that you want it, you know that everyone's behind you 100%, the support is there, there's a family atmosphere, and the energy was very, very high, and it was a lot of positivity, and we've been able to sustain that up until this day.
We're talking to Michigan State head football coach Mel Tucker. That's so important. And then you're trying to establish a culture and then get guys to buy in. But then you have the pandemic, and it's so unusual. Like, there's never been a time in this world really like this. So you can't really compare it to anything. But, Mel, you were with Jacksonville back in 2011 as an example. During the NFL lockout, was there anything that you were able to take from that experience that you can apply to this experience?
Yeah, I was. I leaned on that experience quite a bit, Romy. You know, as you know, during a lockout, you're not allowed to have any communication with the players at all. You can't text them. I mean, email, nothing. You could get fined for that, and that was a big no-no. And so we didn't know when those players would return. We didn't know when the lockout would end, and so I had to make a lot of different types of various contingency plans. In terms of installation of the defensive scheme, and you know, on Excel sheets, you know, if they come back on this date, we better do this. If they come back on this date, we will be able to, if they come back to right before camp starts, we'll only be able to do these things. If it goes 2 weeks into the camp, we have two preseason games. This is what we'll be able to cover. And so we've done similar things here with the contingency plans. And so when we were given the green light to be able to start to practice again and play this season, you know, we were prepared, and we just went right to the process. We're process driven, and we're working our process. And so that experience that I had in 2011 in Jacksonville was extremely valuable.
We're talking to Mel Tucker, Michigan State head football coach. I'm glad you mentioned that you're process-driven, because as part of that process, you know, you've talked in the past about being a fan of neutral thinking, this notion of focusing on the facts and processing information as it comes and trying to avoid riding that roller coaster of emotions. How valuable has that approach been when you deal with an offseason like this, and how have you gone about maintaining that focus of neutral thinking when there's so many major events hanging around the program and the players and the world at large?
Yes, neutral thinking has certainly been an advantage for me and for our staff, because we all believe in that. There was just so many unknowns during this time of COVID, and the information that we were getting sometimes was changing, hourly or daily, and we really just had to be neutral and say, hey, listen, we're not going to judge this. Is it good or bad, right or wrong? It is what it is. What are the facts? What do we know? And based on what we know now, what do we have to do? What is within our control? And there's a lot of uncertainty, but we had to figure out what is certain, what can we control, and then focus on those things. And so, just the neutral thinking, not judging the situation, we never try to just go to being positive. We just try to avoid being negative. We try to stay non-negative. And if you're thinking negatively, it affects you one way. If you verbalize that negativity, it's even seven times more powerful. And so, we don't try to paint things with rose-colored glasses here, but we take them as they come, and we try to be neutral and be non-negative about it and just figure out a way how to get the job done.
Mel, my guy Trevor Moad would be thrilled to hear that, right?
No doubt. Trevor's the guy. I've been working with Trevor since 2015. I met him when I left the NFL and went back to college ball at Alabama. And we've been great friends ever since. And we talk about these things, weekly and daily. He's been a tremendous help to me and to the programs that he's been a part of, Alabama, Georgia, Colorado. He's an integral part of what I do here.
I love him. He's tremendous. Mel Tucker joining me for a few more moments. Mel, so when you look at it, you get the green light, so then it's go time. I mean, ultimately, it's go time, and you got to get ready for the season. And Rutgers, I'm curious, how much of your work right now is about you and your guys, and how much of it is about Rutgers?
Yeah, all of our work right now is about us, about Michigan State, and teach, motivate, developing our players, shifting our culture, focusing on our process, just driving at home and really connecting with our players that we've had very little time with. When we scrimmaged last Saturday, that was the first time that we had seen our players play football in a live setting, live tackling to the ground.
Wow.
That was our first time since we've been here. And so at some point towards the end of next week, we'll start to turn our attention to Rutgers. But until then, we're really just working on Michigan State and how we need to improve, focus on our process, hammering our culture, and working, being very deliberate about connecting with our players.
So, Mel, one last thought. Leave me with this. When you talk about the culture that you're looking to develop and how you want your team to practice and how you want your team to play, what do you want people to think of when they think of Michigan State football?
Yes, when you think about Michigan State football, you should think about a brand of ball that is reflective of how the game is meant to be played. It's a physical game. It's the ultimate team sport. You want to see an unselfish football team that's playing for each other, that has great energy, that doesn't beat itself, averse in all its special situations, guys that play fast, play with tremendous technique and fundamentals. and a team that when you look out there, you say, you know what, there's a difference. I see, you know, that's what Michigan State football is supposed to be about. The Michigan is a hardworking state, you know, bootstrapping state, you know, roll your sleeves up, hard nose, hard working, get it done, no excuses, no explanations, you know, just a rugged, resilient state. And that's what Michigan State has always been. That's what our fans are all about. That's what they expect. And that's the brand, and that's the product that we plan to deliver on the field.
Heck yeah. That football team is going to mirror that basketball team, too. Tom Izzo will tell you the exact same thing. He is the head football coach at Michigan State, first year with the Spartans, and they open up against Rutgers on October 24th. He won a couple of national titles as an assistant and was an assistant at Michigan State previously under Nick Saban. Mel, great to have you back. Great to get caught up. Thanks so much for the conversation. Good luck against Rutgers, and I know you and I will do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. I really appreciate you coming on, having me on, Romy. It's quite an honor. And have a great weekend, buddy.
Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Don't make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why? Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Like, who wants dried out, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who want to shake things up. Next time you want to grab a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Be sure to look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name, because no other beef jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? James Kelly, a.k.a. the flight deck. He happens to be the digital content producer for this talk show. And he's here to entertain and give you a few things to think about heading into the weekend. Let's do this. What's cracking, head? How you living?
What's up, Jim Rowe? How you doing, bud?
Good, dude. How are you, James Kelly?
Man, I'm living life. Enjoying my multi-million dollar studio up here. Happy to be on the phone again.
Oh, man. Are you happy to see that graphic of you over my right hand? Or over my right shoulder. Again, you look dashing.
Good.
Got a lot of hair. You look young. Chiseled features. Looking good.
Yeah, I feel like I have a little bit more muscle tone in real life, but good graphic.
Your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Got that? All right, so a better question than how are you living would be who and what do you like? Why don't we start with the Shield? As flexible as you are, I'm starting to see certain tendencies from you as the season develops, the way you approach certain games, certain teams. It seems to me, Deck, you don't have a hell of a lot of respect for the Philadelphia Eagles. So let me start right there. This is for entertainment purposes only. You've got the Steelers. I know you like them, but do you like them enough to lay 7 points in that one?
Well, that's accurate on the Eagles. I don't have a lot of respect for them, Jim, and I actually don't have a lot of respect for the entire NFC East. So, yes, I'm going to take the Steelers here, -7, and I'm going to do it because they got the best defense in the league. Now, both teams got great pass rushes here, Jim, but the Steelers' defense all around is just better. They're the only team in the NFL allowing they're allowing a league best 2.7 yards a carry. They're also averaging a league-high 5 sacks. And opposing QBs are completing under 60% of the throws against that defense. And Carson Wentz, yes, he did gut out a win against San Francisco last week, but he's been bad. And their offense has been bad. And I just think the big difference is that Steeler defense. So I'm going to lay the points, -7 in the Steelers.
I like that. Very concise, very succinct. Steelers, -7 against the Eagles because they're bad. Carson Wentz has been bad. The offense has been bad. The NFC East is bad. Steelers -7. All right, let me keep it in that horrible division for a minute. There really is nothing worse right now in sports than that division, except maybe the Dallas Cowboys defensive unit. Flight Deck, how bad would you have to be as a team overall to be plus 8.5 against these guys, but that's exactly where the New York Giants find themselves. The Cowboys will put up huge numbers on you late in games that don't matter, but their defense cannot make a single play when it does matter, and they can't get off the field. What do you do with that game? Dallas minus 8.5. Who you got?
So, yes, on Dallas, D, I think everyone can agree with that, right? But I would say also the Giants' offense is on par with that Dallas defense. And if Mike Nolan's defense doesn't fix it here, he's in trouble, Jim. I also will say about the Cowboys' offense, they haven't helped their defense at all. They played a role in a lot of those points. They've turned the ball over a league-high 9 times right now. I like Dallas here. The Giants lack playmakers on defense, and I think the Cowboys clean it up on O. Now, I hate the fact that they just lost Tyron Smith for the year, so I'll wait until Sunday. I'd still hit it at minus 8.5 right now. I'm hoping I can get maybe a minus 8 there, but it started at 11. The money is heavy on New York here, but I'm going to go Dallas. They are 0-4 against the spread this season, but I'm taking the Cowboys.
James Kelly, so I'm looking at the graphic on CBS Sports Network, and I'm looking at your actual picture, and then I'm looking at the graphic over my right shoulder. Dude, you look nothing like your actual picture.
I'm much better looking in person. I think the world saw me yesterday.
What are you talking about, man? That's your actual picture. That graphic is so flattering. All right, so moving on. I want to ask you about the Bengals and the Ravens, Flight Deck. I want to, and I was going to say that I can't ask you because I can't find that game anywhere. Like, every site that I went to looking for a spread for entertainment purposes only, and I can't find it anywhere, but then Lamar practiced, and now it is back up.
Jackson.
You've got the Ravens minus 13 or the Bengals plus 13. Which way are you playing that game?
So I hit this
for entertainment purposes only.
Yes, exactly. So on Sunday night, I hit it for plus 13.5 for the Bengals, Jim. It was off for those 2 days because of obviously Lamar, and the difference between him and Robert Griffin is about as extreme you could do. So they pulled the line. But I do like Cincy here. They're playing hard. Their talent, I mean, there's a major shortage in talent still, but they're scoring touchdowns more this season, about one more touchdown per game. In their past three games, they're averaging 28.6 points per game with Joe Burrow. Burrow, he's thrown 6 touchdowns and 1 interception there, and that's going to be the key this week because the Ravens' D does create turnovers. They forced 1 in 17 straight games, which is an NFL record. And the Bengals have major protections issues there. Also, Baltimore on offense, they'll run all day on them, but I think the Bengals might have Geno Atkins back for the first time this season. I hope they can slow him a little bit there.
That's right.
I'm going to take the plus 13.5 in the Bengals here.
It's amazing to me how much useless crap you've got floating around in that gigantic cavernous head of yours, James Kelly. It's amazing. Did you just say you've got the Bengals plus 13.5?
Yes.
Okay.
Plus 13.5. Yep.
Just wanted to confirm. Let's get some baseball in here before you go, Flight Deck. It's win or go home. Yankees, Rays. Game 5 tonight. Yankees going with the horse. Gerrit Cole, a stud, but somebody who has never made a major league start on less than 4 days rest. How are you approaching Game 5?
Well, so I'm going to go money line here for the Yankees at minus 160. I mean, you can get the Rays at plus 140 right now, and the Rays have a lot of weapons, without a doubt. But look, last week I hit plus 650 on the Yankees to win this thing, and I hedged with the Dodgers, so I'm going to stick with the Yankees here. Now, each team has homered 9 times. Cole is going on short rest, but Glasnow, he's going on 2 days rest, Jim. We're going to get about an inning or two from him. They do have Blake Snell. That is a little bit trouble, but, you know, Gerrit Cole was brought in for the $324 million contract. I'm going to go the Yankees, the money line. I just hope Aaron Boone does not mess this up for me.
Dude, do you think Aaron Boone's job might literally be in jeopardy if they lose this game?
I do. Yeah, I actually do. I think he needs to win this game. I think he needs to get through.
He must be true then. Hey, is it me, the Flight Deck joining me? Is it me, and for entertainment purposes only, is every baseball game a run differential of 1.5? Like, you're going money line on that, but is every game always just minus 1.5 or plus 1.5?
Yes, exactly. Every game is like that. They just set their odds off that.
All right, so we talked to Chris McGee. Before you go, how about the Lakers? So the Lakers have a chance to wrap things up, and we're covering a lot of ground with the deck. Notice he's got the NFL, he's got Major League Baseball. Now we jump over to the association. Lakers minus 7 for the Larry O tonight in the bubble. Do the Heat live to fight another day, or is this it?
This is it, Jim. They do not fight to live another day. Frank Vogel made the adjustment of the series by putting Anthony Davis
on Butler. They live to fight another day, not they fight to live another day.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But the Heat lose. That's my point. Sorry. The Heat lose, but -7, I don't like that, Jim. I'll wait for the first quarter, second quarter. Hopefully the Heat get off to a fast start, and it can move me down about to 4 or 5 points. I'll hit that in game. But, like I said, Vogel with Anthony Davis on Jimmy Butler, I just think that's the difference right here. I'm going to take the Lakers, and I'm also going to take the over-under on Anthony Davis getting hurt at 1.5, Jim. That's guaranteed money.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Dude, I see what you just did there. Did you just say I'm going to take the over-under on AD getting hurt at 1.5? Is that what you just said?
That is my best bet of the year, Jim. It happens every game. He's like a kid. He's like a little kid in Little League. Like, oh, my gosh, Anthony's hurt again. Here we go again. 1.5, go over.
Are you kidding me about that? Dude, he's the best player on the floor right now. They're not where they are without that guy right now. Did you just say he's like a little kid who gets hurt in every single game?
Every single game. Ask Laker fan. I guarantee it'll happen. It happens every game. Every game I've ever watched this guy, something happens and you think like, oh my gosh, he's out.
James, this sounds extremely personal to me, which would lead me to believe that you're actually gambling, but I know you're not because this is for entertainment purposes only. How did this get so personal? And when you say the over-under is 1.5, 1.5 what? A quarter and a half? A minute and a half? An hour and a half? What does that mean? And where did you see that alleged prop bet?
1.5 times dropped. How many times they'll drop in the game and act like, oh, my gosh, what just happened here? Jim, Andre Bargnani thinks this dude is a tough nut, man.
Dude, what's the over-under on Paul Pierce sharing his wheelchair? Are you going to go there next? What the hell is the matter with you?
I'd love to go there.
Dude, you have settled in, all right? Now you're getting really comfortable taking unsolicited and unwarranted shots at AD out of nowhere. Where did that come from, Head?
It's going to happen, man. I love him, and I think he should be the MVP here because of what he's done with Jimmy Butler. He won't win that because LeBron will. I love his game, but that toughness, my goodness.
He is Chris McGee. My brother, Chris. What's going on? How are you?
Romy, always an honor to be on. I hope you, Janet, and those studly boys of yours are doing well, brother. What a good time to be in L.A.
Oh, man, it's a great time. Hope you and the fam are doing well, too, Chris. So you're always upbeat already. I can hear it. You're positive. You're always going to bring the energy. How you feeling today when you wake up the morning of Game 5 knowing that the Lakers have a chance to close out the finals this evening and win title number 17?
Romy, it's a crazy feeling. I haven't had it in a long time. You know how spoiled we are living in this town. But, you know, I took this job at Spectrum Sportsnet, you know, 8 years ago when the Lakers started that new network. And man, we haven't even been to the playoffs, Jim. We've had no wins. Big Game James, Rob, the whole crew. So today just I felt good, man. My little one, my nine-year-old daughter came up. She's got full Laker gear on. She's like, Daddy, this is how I'm watching the game tonight. I got Silk Bra, the legend, tweeting me. I mean, it's pretty awesome, Jim. I got to tell you, I'm trying to keep it in perspective. Got a show to host, but you know I'm ready, buddy.
My man, that is HB City Council candidate Silk Bra tweeting at you. Chris McGee joining us. All right, so not only do you have a chance to close out, or do they have a chance to close out the finals, but they're going to break out the Mamba jerseys tonight. Chris, now you were the one leading that charge on Twitter earlier in the week for that very move. How fired up are you that they're going to wear those uniforms?
It's funny, Romy, I tweeted that right after the game because I had heard that they weren't scheduled to wear them. And I even said in the tweet, literally, I have zero pull, but it would be really cool. And sure enough, the right decision was made. Listen, the last time you and I talked was the day after Kobe died, Romy. And here we are, you know, 9+ months later. You feel his spirit everywhere. I know you do as well. You were tight with him. You had a relationship. You live in a Newport. You know, he's part of that community. Such a major part of L.A., iconic. Global figure that he was. And listen, man, like, I'd be lying if I said I haven't thought a lot about him over the last couple weeks. There's always a little sadness, Romy, like me thinking, man, this would be so fun at Staples and just the Kobe chance. You could just imagine it, right? But when I think about Bron winning his fourth tonight, if he can, in Orlando, that's where Kobe won his fourth. You know Kobe's there in spirit. It's a big deal. And they just play different in those jerseys, Jim. It's just true, man.
No, they do, Chris. I don't think there's any doubt. And you obviously have a lot more pull than you think. Chris McGee is joining us. You know, I've asked this of every single NBA analyst that I've spoken to over the course of the year. So let me ask you also right now, how would you explain LeBron James playing at the level that he is at this point in his career?
It's unreal. And I feel like because I'm hosting every game night and every non-game night show, I often try to find new ways to describe him, Romy, and it's real tough. 17 years in, I just don't know if we've ever seen anything like it. I've never seen a guy be able to kind of have a pulse on what the game needs and what his team needs every single game. And that's why I always say he's the MVP. Like, he really dictates, Romy, how both teams play, especially the Lakers. Like, he just has those nights where he knows you need his offense and he's going for 12 or 14 in the first quarter. And then you have those nights where he only has 8 at half, but then you look and he's got 11 assists already. And it doesn't matter how you think he plays, Jim. When you look at the box score at the end of the night, it's 39-10, 29-14-11. I'm running out of ways to describe it. But I think what the most important and most impressive thing, Romy, for me is this year he changed something and he led the league in assists for the first time. 6'9", what, 280? He led the assist, led the league in assists for the first time in the 17th year. To me, that's an incredible stat.
It's an amazing stat. Like, as much as I love Karl Malone back in the day, he was not going to lead the league in assists, right? You know,
no.
So when you look, Chris McGee is my guest, expertly breaking this all down. So what do you think, Chris, knowing the man the way you know the man and knowing the reaction of Laker fans when he first got here, it was such a Kobe town, what do you think that a fourth NBA title and a first title with the Lakers would mean to LeBron?
I think he, a lot like Kobe was actually, Jim, and you know this from all those hours you spent with him and interviewing him, man, he was a student of the game. LeBron is cut from that same cloth. And it was interesting. When he came over, when he first came over a couple summers ago, he there wasn't a press conference. He didn't come out right away and embrace it like the fans wanted. So it was a little bit of an interesting start, right? But this year, before the season even started, he even said, like, listen, Laker fans don't care what you did before. And he understands what it takes. And then Kobe passing, the way he kind of took the microphone, took the torch and ran with it and led this team, he knows exactly what it means. And I think for him, Jim, outside of the Cleveland title, he's putting this right up at the top. And for me, his legacy grows even more. I mean, all those people that said he couldn't win in the West and, you know, had to be in the easy East with the cakewalk. Well, he's proven them all wrong again. I mean, he continues to do it.
Chris McGee is joining us. The Lakers have a chance to close it out tonight. You know, Chris, you mentioned that you got that job 8 years ago, and you and I would talk. You would come on the Daily Show, and I know those were challenging times. Like, if you were to go back to 2014, the Lakers were 27-55. Then they lost 61. Then they lost 65. Then they lost 56. What were those years like for you as the guy who had been hosting Lakers coverage at that time?
You know, I think back to those times where I was coming on your TV show, and I was telling you, man, Jimmy, I've been listening to you since the early 90s, and it was just so awesome. I'll never forget you. You know, you knew who I was, and you gave me some advice about, like, hey, just keep hosting those shows, keep grinding. Like, for me, because I always felt like it, and I did a funny video at the start of the playoffs. I did, like, a, you know, 3-minute rant. You know, Laker fans were loving it. But basically, I was saying, like, 17 wins, 19 wins, and I was the first face you would see. You know what I mean?
Right.
After all those losses,
always.
That wasn't very fun. So I think back to those times, and I was watching some old videos recently. I mean, listen, we navigated through it. We would try to pump up Ryan Kelly as the stretch four you needed. Robert Sacre, what a story. Roy Hibbert, can he get back to defensive player of the year? I mean, the stuff I was slinging, I think back and I go, man, I was really trying to keep it positive.
Wow.
The difference, Jim, it's just easier working now. It's easier doing shows. You can just speak from the heart and tell the truth. It's pretty awesome.
It's really something. I'm kind of chuckling because, yeah, man, you worked it. You always spoke from the heart, and I know those storylines that you were selling, you believed, and you did what you did then. It is much easier right now, but it's amazing, Chris, the way it turned around. Like, Magic steps down in April 2019. At that time, the outside perception of the Lakers was, this is a really, really dysfunctional organization. 18 months later, they've got a chance to win an NBA championship. How has the organization and this team turned it around so quickly?
It's crazy, but you got to give a lot of credit to the front office. And you go back to what you were talking about when Magic stepped away and Luke went to Sacramento. Those were tough times. But when you land a player like AD and all those years, Jim, that you talked about, the 17 wins, the 19 wins, the building up those assets and draft picks and those young players, you were able to trade them for Anthony Davis. The work then began, I thought, signing an Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, who was an afterthought, Romy, Rondo, getting him back in the mix, even guys like JaVale McGee, role players like Alex Caruso, who really, unless you were around the organization, you just didn't know how awesome this kid was. All those guys, getting Markieff Morris for free after the deadline, all those little things added up to a championship team. I mean, here's the thing, Jim, when I'm watching over the playoffs, they have a luxury that no other team had. Just the versatility to change on any given night, any given series, go small, go big, go with three guards, go with all bigs. I mean, it's insane what they've been able to do, and you have to take your hat off to that organization. To be able to pivot, Romy, like you just said, the day after Magic, you know, it looked like they were, you know, lottery bound again, and literally here we are a year and a half later, and they're in the finals. I don't know if there's another organization in sports that would be able to do that.
Chris McGee joining us, and honestly, if I'm being really transparent, I did not see that happening. I did not see that pivot. I mean, it's amazing. It really is amazing. Chris, before you go, I want to ask you, for some reason, like, Frank Vogel is not getting a lot of credit for the job that he's done this year, and I want to say it again for the record. I think this guy is an unbelievable coach. I said it, an unbelievable coach. I think he's done an amazing job, and I think he's a great coach. How impressed are you with the job that he has done and the way he handled the pressure that comes along with coaching this franchise?
You just nailed it for me, Jim. He handles the pressure. He handles his business. He's not a guy that's looking for all the credit. He has never mentioned a word. I'll never forget sitting in Jeannie's office. I did a sit-down half-an-hour interview with him before the season started, and that's where we did it. We had about 20 minutes to chat, and I'll never forget walking away going, man, I'm really impressed by this guy. A couple guys I knew around the league that played for him, they're like, trust me, this guy can coach. But I love, Jim, that, like, it's almost like Pete Carroll when he came to SC. He's like the third or fourth option, right? And all of a sudden you got Jason Kidd, you got Lionel Hollins, you got all kinds of, you know, head coaching experience, and people thought that that would be pressure as well and that everyone would start to try to, you know, divide this group. And he kept everyone on the same page. And honestly, Jim, the only goal this team has had was win a championship. And when everyone's on the same page and no one's selfish and looking for their own numbers or looking for the credit or looking for the money, you can do amazing things. And that's what Frank's been able to do. And by the way, coach his butt off. Like, all those adjustments defensively, give the man some credit. He's been incredible.
Chris McGee joining us. Now, when you mentioned, like, those things that could have happened, like, guys, if they're running off and they've got their own agenda and they're thinking about me, I mean, you're talking about a guy, the artist previously known as Dwight Howard. Chris, I got to ask you, like, how pleased are you with what Dwight has brought to the Lakers in his return to L.A., and how shocked are you by the way he's shown up and maintained this the entire time?
If 8 years ago someone came to me and said, hey, man, you're going to be on the Jim Rome show and you're going to be applauding and praising Dwight Howard, I would have slapped him in the face. I mean,
right?
Jim, it's you know, when I really saw it, Romy, for the first time, I think it was right around game three or five. You know, we're always in the studio, but once in a while the boss will run us out to Staples and we'll do the pregame show there and shake hands and kiss the babies and feel it. You know, it's pretty fun. James is out there with me. We have a great time. And I'll never forget sitting there watching the game, you know, press row with Big Game James. And I'm looking out there and I look over and I go, James, I go, Big Game, Dwight Howard, they're chanting his name at Staples. He had the quickest turnaround, Romy, I've ever seen. And all he did was hustle, compete, set screens, dunks, just do all those things you always wanted him to do. And he did it selfless. That was it. And he stepped up for his teammates. He backed KCP on Instagram when everyone was all over him. And he was a leader. And they fell in love with him again. It was pretty awesome. I'm so happy for him, Jim. He's really been through it.
I think it's been absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it watching it, and I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and for it to come to an end, but it didn't. And then, Chris, how funny, I've got about 60 seconds. When he turned heel in the postseason, man, the whole thing is just so hilarious to me. Like, he's doing all the dirty work, but you can't help but just look at this guy and laugh, and for the right reason.
Right, you just hit it on the head, for the right reasons. And how about, like, he doesn't play against Houston at all. His attitude is great. And then he comes out and he just baffles Jokic in that first game and just causes an absolute havoc. And you're like, there's the value. that's Dwight. He's bad. And you're right. You're laughing for all the right reasons.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. So how was your weekend? How are you living? What's going on? I hate to say I told you so.
I hate it.
Except I told you so.
Russ looks right side. Got a man in the end zone reaching up. Is he in for the touchdown?
Yeah! Is he in for the touchdown? Did Russ throw it?
He is.
Do you know how
David
good you
Moore.
Have to be on a defense to be 4-0? That's that bad.
So good.
That damn good. Legendarily good.
Touchdown! Odell Beckham
hey, Dallas,
Jr.
You did a nice job with that America's Team moniker.
My moniker.
But we will take it from here. Hit the bricks.
How about this?
Browns.
The Bills are America's team. You know it. The JTP knows it. And those ruptured polyps in my colon know it.
Austin Hooper.
Bro, that's how I know we're boys with that intro, man. I love it.
Jim, I'm lethal. An amalgamation of like three or four different run games.
How about some hot garbage?
Garbage.
Matt Patricia.
Certainly, I think when I came to Detroit, there was a lot of work to do, and that's what we're trying to do.
Jim Caldwell tossed you the keys to a really nice ride. You proceeded to drive it into a ditch, soak it in gasoline, and then set that rig on fire. Charles Robinson.
I've been itching to ask you about the fact that the Patriots are taking two planes. Would you take the COVID flight?
Yeah, I think I might.
Howard, what about the pilots? Like, who wants to fly the COVID plane?
It's a touchdown! Rodgers has thrown another TD!
13 Rogers. Touchdowns, zero INTs. This is a guy who could have come to camp bitter.
That only affects me if I allow it to
He's
affect
He's just not about that life. Cooper.
I would say I'm looked at differently a week later, but I'm not a different coach. But the only difference now a week later is that we have something that they can't take away from us, and it's freaking awesome.
Whatever we're doing is not working. Something needs to change. Something needs to be different.
JJ! Why dance around that? He should have just thumbed out breaking. I have fired Bill O'Brien.
This thing was so toxic. When we got the news, me and my buds, smiles.
Me and my boys, probably. Jack, Jim, Johnny, Captain Morgan, PJ Fleck.
We read Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I know it sounds crazy, but everything we do, especially with this bubble, has to be just right.
That's right.
Dak Prescott is the best player on a nationally based team.
That call, well, besides everything, that was the best call on the screen, according to Hawk.
Shoot that three, AD. He does. It's good.
AD was good, baby.
These are not the Showtime Lakers. They're banging. They're battling. They're switching. They're jumping into passing lanes. Congratulations, Laker fan.
Congratulations.
Car flags up.
A hero is more than a sandwich.
The hell does that even mean?
A hero is more than a sandwich.
You know why the FCC exists? To prevent broadcasters from saying really reckless and really cheesy things on the air.
A hero is more than a sandwich.
Dude. Hey, listen, I don't care where you come out on this. When you think about the legendary guitarist, the best guitarist ever, he's on your short list. I mean, you could say it's subjective. You could say it's a matter of opinion. I'm going to say that's just a fact. R.I.P., brother. Joe Gibbs.
Hey, Jim, thank you. I appreciate that introduction. I didn't know I did all that stuff.
Eric Silkinson.
I do have some name recognition.
Eric Silkinson, as the locals know as Silk Bra.
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 Eric.
Bra.
Narc.
Bra.
Eric.
Bra.
Tito.
Bad girl.
Traquan Smith is my guest.
We had a saying, you know, no block, no rock. So I took that to heart. I love to block for my teammates.
Block! USC quarterback Keaton Slovis is my guest.
You know, it's always been a job before the pandemic even. You're there to play football and do well in school first. Especially now, I think it's almost made it easier to just focus on football and kind of avoid all the distractions.
No days off!
No days off. That's how you stay on top. You know, it's never any days off. You want to be at the top of the game? No break.
Break.
That is one of the best plays of any postseason. The only thing that could have made that moment better is if there were fans at Dodger Stadium where that went down. Then that place would have exploded.
The Carew Show, let's go!
He basically represents the other side of the glass. He's got, like, Hawk's frailty, James Kelly's serial killer stare, and Ritt's ability to age rapidly.
It's lit!
This is not Detroit!
Man, how do you not take a knee?
This is the Super Bowl!
And the Chicago Bears!
Come on, man, you're the GOAT. Start acting like it.
How many of you are Michigan State fans?
Mel Tucker is my guest.
Michigan is hardworking, bootstrapping state, you know, roll your sleeves up, rugged, resilient state.
Dodger baseball!
Shout out to number six. Keep pounding. You still got the pump chicks record.
Uh-oh.
I did not say that.
Silk Bra, the legend, tweeting me.
Come on.
Andre Bargnani thinks this dude is a tough nut, man.
I grab the baseball, I write FU on it, and I throw it through the hitter's soul.
Signed American Chewy.
Air roam it in.
Hey, go to hell. Get a job.
I didn't know hell was hiring.
Great catching up with you again. It's been a while.
Alvin, was that the sound of a doctor puncturing a guy's lung?
Woo!
Hey, I love your show. I love you guys. Hope to see you again soon.
Close the kiss.
A hero is more than a savage.
Off my page.
Cyrus the Virus.
Yeah, he knew.
Get off me.
Friday night, here we come.
Good night now. Good night now.